Ever feel like you're doing everything right, but not really moving anywhere? You're working hard, following the plan, but it still feels like you're just checking boxes instead of building momentum. In this episode, we're talking about how to change that. You'll hear how to bring ideas instead of problems, how to find environments where you'll actually make an impact, and why curiosity and deep listening are the real traits that separate the good from the great. By the end, you'll have a clearer sense of how to take control of your growth, not by waiting for opportunity, but by creating it. Let's get started. Welcome to Business Isn't Hard. Today's guest is Luke Criffield, head of growth and one of the first hires at Ampelo, a company transforming how manufacturers manage surplus inventory to build a more sustainable circular economy. Luke's career path has taken him from advising Fortune 500 companies on growth strategy to now leading revenue and marketing initiatives at fast-scaling startups like Wayfair and Kahoot. Now, at Ampelo, he's helping manufacturers unlock hidden value while reducing waste, a mission that blends business innovation and environmental impact. From consulting to startup leadership, Luke's experienced a lot when it comes to what it means to build systems that scale responsibly and how to create growth strategies. Luke, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thanks, Oliver. It's great to chat with you.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to this. So I'd love to get a little bit more into your background. Can you tell me a little bit how you got to Ampelo and where you are today?
Yeah, for sure. I had this might sound a little funny, but I think even when I was a lot younger, like in school, I always kind of liked doing things my own way. I liked school, but didn't love it, right? I always loved kind of getting to explore new things, thinking independently and creatively. And I think that the more and more I thought about, oh, what should my career be? I kind of had an inclination that working at a smaller company would be for me, like more responsibility, more ability to do different things within a company. And then, you know, as I learned more and, you know, kind of you come out of school, you see different jobs, like understood that, okay, specifically what might that look like for me would be a startup. I don't know if I was right or wrong about this, but, you know, going to school, I went to Georgetown, economics major, like there's tons of consulting firms that recruit on campus. They have great pitches. And I think the core pitch and why a lot of people join it is that you feel like you can see a lot of different business contexts, navigate within a firm to like figure out what do you like doing best? Do you like working with supply chain? Do you like working on the group, the kind of the top line side, what have you? It was great for me. I actually started at Deloitte for like 3 months, realized this is a massive company and I'm not going to enjoy this, and jumped like extremely quickly into a boutique growth strategy firm. Wow. And that was an awesome start for me. And I think doing that confirmed a few things for me, for myself. Like, yes, I thrive in a smaller company with more responsibility. Yes, I think growth strategy is really interesting, but I don't have to be like advisor to a CEO. I also just find sales and marketing fascinating. And the concept of how do I frame myself to convince people that this is something that's going to deliver value for them, and just the endless permutations of how to do that. And again, don't know if I was right or wrong in this, but I felt leaving consulting like, okay, I don't really know how to do it in-house yet. What do I have to offer to a startup? So I took a series of different jobs just trying to do it in-house. I did sales strategy at Wayfair. I did marketing strategy for a year at Charter. And then I found a good startup opportunity where I was like, okay, I've got my feet wet kind of on all sides of the growth equation, including the strategic side, a lot of it in the consulting side. And so joined a startup, and I think the Kahoot, I learned a few things. It definitely confirmed that this was right for me. I don't think it was the right company for me long-term, but Ampelo has been now for the past 3 years, and it's been super rewarding.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's a really incredible story. And I know you spent a lot of time in consulting, and then you learned a lot in startups, and you kind of realized, obviously, like you said, that, you know, the smaller companies are for you. For someone who's kind of in that headspace, like really enjoys those smaller companies, would you recommend maybe that broader consulting approach to learn, or just going directly into the startup to learn? Because either way, you're going to learn a lot. Which way do you think you learn? Maybe not best, but what are the differences there?
Yeah, I think that's the right way to answer ask the question, right? Is you keyed in on it. It's not necessarily what's best. It's like, what are the trade-offs? Working a consulting firm or going in-house to a bigger company, actually, those are two different. So I'll say working at a consulting firm, I think the value prop that they sell to like kids coming out of college is absolutely true for the most part. It's, yeah, like I said, you'll get to see a ton of different business contexts. You will learn just by doing. You'll soak it up. You'll get into the room with clients. You'll understand how they think. You'll really understand how to present yourself, how to persuade, how to communicate effectively. All of those are just fundamental business skills that I think, had I not started in consulting, I wouldn't have been as strong on a lot of those like really fundamental skills. And I think I
Interesting.
remember joining Wayfair. I joined a team that I don't think had any other ex-consultants on it. And I do think I stood out in a lot of those ways, in the persuasiveness, the communication, the understanding of how to work with the senior leadership when you got the chance to be in the room with them. But at the same time, learning by doing is so powerful. So I can't sit here and say it. Had I not at age 22 just gone to a startup, well, now here I am, however many years later, 14, 13 years later. If I'd just been working in startups the whole time, I definitely wouldn't be in the same place. But I'd like to think that I would have learned and developed in a at least a roughly analogous way that I would have figured out how to drive value on the top line side. I think the challenge of just going in head first is that it's hard to know exactly what you want to do, and especially coming right out of college. And so that consulting or other professional services, it gives you a little bit of buffer time. It gives you a little time to grow up. It gives you a little time to reflect and think while you're building really valuable skills. And then you can be a lot more targeted in what you do next. And I personally am really, I'm really happy with the way that path turned out for me. That said, there are other friends of mine who are founders and have are founders of like really successful companies and have been doing that a lot longer. And you could say they found their place faster, but I don't know, maybe they just knew what they wanted to do better.
So I am curious. I know you went to Deloitte and immediately jumped ship just because you
Yeah.
liked the smaller company feel. What about a small company is so appealing to you as opposed to like a really large corporation?
Yeah. It's the level of responsibility. At a large corporation, there's so many layers. There's so many different people who need to approve everything. You just everything moves slower and your role is smaller. I think that's a truism, especially for people who are middle management down. I imagine, I can't say because I haven't done it myself, but I mean, I have mentors who are kind of high up in big companies. I think you feel a lot more agency at that point. You know, you have this big org you're managing, right? Like you're moving and shaking, big numbers. I think still they felt hamstrung a lot, right? There's still levels above them. Whereas in a small company, if there's, you know, Wayfair had 8, 9, 10 levels of employees, right? Are you an L1, L2, L3, all the way up? Yeah, Amplio, we had two until recently. You know, until we are like 7 or 8 people, everyone reported to one founder or the other. Now we have three levels, right? Like probably going to go to four. You know, we're 15 people. By the time this comes out, we'll probably be 17 or 18, right? But like, it's still so many fewer levels of management that what you do or what a L1, an entry level person does, realistically, you're talking to the deciders right away, about whether or not you can implement this new initiative. Can you adjust your role? Is there a way to do your role better? If you have a really big company, you're asked to do a certain thing, you need to manage to certain metrics, and your ability to influence whether or not you can manage to these KPIs or those KPIs is extremely limited. Like, you'll have to make a damn good case, and it'll take a long, long time to be like, actually, sales expense ratio isn't the right KPI. But here at a smaller company, everyone has so much more agency to define what good looks like and to overachieve and to be proactive. It just that I find that incredibly motivating, knowing that if I take the initiative to go do something, look into something, figure out a better way to do it, chances are we'll implement it. I don't think that's as much the case at bigger companies. And in a big company, do your job, do it really well. And that's compelling in and of itself, but I don't find that exciting or interesting.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. I mean, I like that. You have so much agency, if you will, at a smaller company, and just the power to do things, even if you're like early in your career, which I think is super cool, and you can learn a lot from that. Now, with that, obviously there's two sides. You have a lot of responsibility, and you have to do, I mean, you have to really carry your weight, especially in a smaller company. You can't coast like you could in maybe a larger company. What skills, I'll say, or how do you even, add a lot of value, especially as maybe a younger person kind of going into a role where they have that level of responsibility? What can they do to really stand out and contribute and learn too, right? Because they're coming, maybe they don't have a lot of experience in that realm, and so they may not be making, or they just don't have that level of expertise.
I have a cliche that I really love, which is, come to your boss with solutions, not problems. I bet you heard it before. It's out there. I'm certainly not the first person to think of that one. But that's true anywhere. But I think it feel, and this is something I've had to learn, and that I think has been a big evolution for my success in my role at Amplio, is at a bigger company, when you say come with problem or come with solutions, not problems, you might work on something for months before you bring it up like two levels above you, right? Like you really, really like this is your initiative. You've crunched all the data, perfected it, seen every angle, and therefore this is what I think we should do next quarter or next year, right? And the boss just wants to be like, wow, that does all make sense to me. Let's see if we can prioritize it. And so I definitely, and definitely at a consulting firm, there's a degree to that too. Like you do that extremely quickly, but like you have to do everything perfectly before your manager even asks you, right? Like consulting has its downsides for sure. It's pre like pressure cooker, right? Yeah, what people say is true, but there's, it comes with the upsides. At a startup, at a small company, I mean, I joined like there's four or five of us, right? Everyone's doing seven different jobs. Nothing you ever do is ever going to be very good. Or I'm not very good, but as good as it could be, let me say. That's a better way of saying it. You always are going to have to move on to the next thing. And on top of that, because there's so few people and you're all connected, and there's a much bigger degree of what I do influences what the person sitting next to me does and how their job can be better. If you sit on something for a month and really try to perfect it, well, two things will happen. One, the business will have changed so much that it's not worth it anymore. And two, you're not getting feedback from four different people that work on radically different things from you, but depend so much on you. And if you just had written a draft in 2 hours of this is what I think is a problem, here's kind of three key assumptions. I think we do assumption mapping here a ton. The more confident we are, the less we do it. But like back in the day when we didn't have any inclination of a PMF or anything, we're assumption mapping all day. It's just what are the critical assumptions that we're really uncertain about that need to be true? Throw a bit of that together, go to the team, say, this is an opportunity. This is what I think. This is why I think it is. These are the key assumptions. What do you think? And just do it together. Then go
Interesting.
again, do it. But you kind of are coming with problems at that point. Like I'm going with problems to my founders, but they're happy. I'm framing them correctly and I'm giving them a way to come in. We do 30, 60 minutes. I mean, 120 if it's really hard. Get meaningfully move it forward and then go design an experiment that we can do in 2 weeks and make it fail. And it's such a different attitude, right? It's such a different way of approaching to like come with solutions, not problems. But really, you're coming with a solution too. It's just a very erratically different solution. It's a solution to make an idea fail quickly, which is what a startup needs, versus at a big company, you're not coming up with something that can fail quickly. You better get whatever you do right because, 100 people are contributing, 300 people's jobs are affected, right? Like you can't play with risk in the same way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I like that point, right? You're really testing an idea to fail in a startup. In a big company, probably don't really want to fail to that extent. So I think that comparison is really interesting. And the level of collaboration, right? I mean, the fact that you're just going to your founders with a problem after 2 hours of thinking about it and then working through it together, I think is really cool. And so, I mean, a lot of what you do specifically are growth related. So whether it's, marketing, sales, et cetera. I'm curious, just to, I mean, maybe this is like a, I think growth is for the most part understood, but I'm curious what your take about what really is growth. Like, what does growth look like to you at Amplio or just at a startup in general?
You could ask 10 different people and you get 10 different answers, right? But I appreciate you asking what does it look like to me, because my answer, it's I think it can break down in a few different ways. The first is just the strategic piece of like, where even are we heading? What's our value wedge? Who's our clientele? What are their unmet needs? If we solve those needs in a certain way, do we win? And then what do we win? And can we charge money for it? Right. Like, and kind of the basic blocking and tackling, but in a startup, you need to do basic blocking and tackling. But it's so interesting, and it's a lot of white space and a lot of just thinking through why are we doing what we're doing and why are we aiming the rest of the org at this? And then I think two things come out of that. One is just the how do we sell it? Right. So how do we market ourselves? How do the salespeople sell? I think, I love it. It's a fantastic process, but I don't think it looks that much differently that it looks in any other different org. It how you market, how you sell. And granted, I think there are startup people out there and lots of marketing and salespeople out there who are way, way more creative than me, and doing things in cool ways. But get the message out there and then deliver value to people in a way that makes sense to them and makes them want to work with you. That's the one side. And then the other side, which I've done more lucky, been lucky enough to do more and more of, I think, as Amplio has got more of our feet under us, got the A round, growing, is is the product side. Is my organization, my team, our team, we learn so much about how the clients see our problem space and our solution and what competitors aren't doing right and what unmet needs that they have, that we, I think, understand the space and understand the customer better than anyone else in the company. And so we can feed that to the product team. And I think I'm kind of the conduit for Amplio of feeding that into the product team, that voice of the market, voice of the customer, and then also keeping kind of the high level strategic North Star in mind to the product team. And I'm not the PM, right? I'm not telling them, therefore, this is what you build. But I've been super involved in the development of our different products and how they frame from things that are really, really sales related, like how does our platform look? What metrics does it show where? Like right? Things that are fundamentally selling to under the hood things of what is next? What's the next feature? How is that going to deliver more value to the client? Can we charge for that, or do we earn money in a different way? But I'm not really getting into conversations of how much development time is that going to take, managing the tickets, all that lovely stuff that PMs do that I don't touch and I'd rather not touch. But kind of that voice of the market and the customer and getting that over to the product team in a way that they can really grapple with, and then listening to them, feeding that back into our team and testing for that. Hey, let's listen for this. Like, we really want to validate this. That back and forth is incredibly rewarding and a ton of fun.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're essentially a conduit between these two different areas, which I think is super cool. And you mentioned your strategic North Star in there a little bit. And in startups, I think, like, especially in the beginning, and correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of times it's easy to target different groups, like mess around with different types of customers, different industries, I'll say. I don't know, it depends. I'm curious, how important was it for you to really lock in on a specific type of customer, like really find that product market fit? And how did you find it? I mean, I think that would be a really tough thing to find in the beginning.
That's the question, right? I mean, you're asking all the right questions. It's so hard, and it is, I think, it is the fundamental question. We got started, with the kind of the circular manufacturing economy messaging and the idea of this is how we can frame ourselves. Because we started out, we had a piece of software that actually did something related but slightly different. And we had a client who also had this big adjacent issue of tons of surplus assets, and they figured we were the most adjacent, closest people they knew who could solve the problem. And we
Interesting.
did. And we did. But then there's a question, okay, we can find lookalikes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's actually our ICP. It's like there are tons of different adjacencies, tons of different industry types, tons of different types of surplus, right? From retail goods to apparel to the manufacturing stuff we work with to the electronics that we also work with. And we had a strong hypothesis that it was going to be working more with enterprises and working more with kind of more value dense B2B goods, equipment, machinery, industrial electronics. We had that hypothesis, and that is where we started. But we also didn't know exactly what that would look like and didn't want to cross other things off too quickly. And so, I mean, I set up Google search campaigns. I mean, this is years ago, but I kind of put a little bit of spending towards completely different categories, just so that we could get some leads in from like, so like I have the $5 million of excess sweatshirts, right? And like things like that. Just so we could talk to them, see if we can solve their problem. At the very least, can we refer them to someone who can solve the problem and just get those conversations so that we have more information and can make more better assumptions about building out the different business cases. And as we are just legitimately trying to build clientele in our ICP, we also, and I was doing a lot of the work of kind of like testing out what do the different angles look like, how does the math work, how do we, what does value capture look like with these different groups. And some of them the math made sense, others it didn't. For a ton of them, it pretty quickly we figured out it didn't make sense. For a lot of them, the business case rested on a few key assumptions, which could go either way. Just as we got more clients in, more opportunities in, we always say, okay, no, that assumption is very firmly into the red now, and that torpedoes the business case for this segment. And we're able to focus, focus, focus. And that was over the course of years. But now I think we're sitting at a place where we had that focus. We've nailed that focus for a while now, and now I think we're growing back out because we're better at operating. We understand what we're doing, and we can be really disciplined about picking the adjacencies where we know the business case is going to work and attacking it again. Some of them are going back to ones that we previously eliminated, but like we have more capabilities now. And so what we can do have for them has changed and we can capture more value. Others that we eliminated back in the day, if anything, just look even worse to me now. So like it goes back and forth. It goes either way.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think that, that final analogy is really spot on of really focusing in the beginning and trying to have that like very specific niche. And then once you've really drilled that home, then you expand from there. But I mean, it's not like really drilling down and finding that focus initially seems to be super, super important. So thank you. This has been great so far. I would love to transition a little bit into a lightning round. So I have a few questions to ask you, just in general. The first question is, what is your favorite business book or podcast?
Oh, business book. The name is on the tip of my tongue. I think I have a special place in my heart for Double Digit Growth. It's by Michael Tracy. He's actually the founder of the consulting firm I worked for, Tracy and Company.
Oh, there
And I
you
think they kind of like, I joined and they kind of put in your hands. And obviously, it's a little like maybe a little self-dealing, right?
go.
But I just graduated college, right? Like, what do I really know? And sorry, not to say you don't.
No, of course.
But you learn a lot as you come out. And I remember
Sure.
reading the book, and it has a lot of simple but pretty compelling frameworks for thinking through enterprise growth. And it started just putting some pieces together in my head of like, here's how I can think about these like business problems that I didn't really have any way of thinking about before I read through, what is pretty a very approachable book. So it has a pretty special place in my heart.
Interesting. No, I like that a lot. That's super cool. Next question is, what is your biggest pet peeve in business?
Oh man, my colleagues would probably laugh because I have a good amount of pet peeves. I'm going to share a non-business one because we
Okay.
were talking about it the other day. We write up like controversial conversational questions on the whiteboard every week, and the
Okay.
last one was, "What counts as a honeymoon?" And I'm a honeymoon purist, where I say it's
Wow.
only a honeymoon if you go the day after your wedding. And that was super
Yeah.
unpopular with the rest of the team. I think the culture has moved past me on that one. But I'll say that was my pet peeve slash grandpa yelling at clouds, the last one that I can remember.
Hot take. Yeah, no, I love that. That's really funny. Now I know networking is a little bit of a buzzword. I might rephrase this to say, like, what is your best relationship building tip? But what is your best networking tip as a whole to get to meet new people, especially, out of college?
Be genuinely curious in the other person. It obviously networking becomes so much easier, like the more that you learn and grow and other people want to talk to you. But when you're young, like people don't want to talk to you necessarily. Like they're not banging down your door, right? And that's fine. That's how it is. But it's really, really, it's always nice to talk to someone who's genuinely curious about what you do. So, like exactly what you did, right? Like you did a little bit of research on me and what my company does, and you're genuinely curious about us. And so I'm happy to share. Versus if you go into the conversation with an idea of wanting something from that person, other than just learning, they're not going to be receptive, because you turn it into a transaction and network it. And actually, it's perfect. It's in the question you ask, in the way you ask the question. If you think about it as networking, then really you're thinking about it as sales, and you're making it transactional. And as a young gun, you probably don't have all that much to offer. But if you turn it into relationship building and just trying to learn, well, then you're getting something. All some somewhere, excuse me. Also great sales advice there, right? That's how
Yeah,
you
I
do
know, right?
sales
You can
too,
apply
right?
that right to sales too, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
no, you're totally right. Having to go in there with the approach of, building a relationship, even how can you help them versus just trying to get something out of it, I think is really key. What is a skill that every leader should have?
Listening. Just listening. I think that you can tell the difference between someone who is genuinely reflecting on what you're saying as you're saying it and chewing it through it in their head, and then takes a moment to think and respond, versus you can tell, and these I can think of the bosses I didn't get along with very well and didn't really enjoy working for. When I'm speaking, sharing something, you can tell that you're halfway through, and you can tell that they are just waiting for their next moment to speak. And even if they're going to agree with you, that still is not fun. It's like, well, I have more to share. Obviously, it's like you don't want to interrupt them, but it's so much more than just like don't interrupt. It's like genuinely listen, reflect, take 5 or 10 seconds, then answer. And I think leaders that do that you build so much respect and trust with your team when if you say no, at least if they know that you truly listened and reflected on what they said, they're usually not all that mad.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And like you said, it really builds that, I won't say rapport, but builds that trust with your team members and like makes them more willing to approach with new ideas too, which I think is really cool. Final question of the lightning round is, what is your go-to method for handling stress?
Playing video. Well, I'm healthier now, but I gotta say, playing video games, that's been like, I think that I have some healthier methods. Like I have things like going for a walk, deep breaths, like a lot of, I think, this stuff that you can find online that works. And that usually works for me, but I'm not gonna lie. And like when shit really hits the fan, if I go play I like grand strategy games like Civilization, like they're really engrossing. Like you gotta think about what you're doing really deeply when you're playing it. I just go, I play, you get engrossed and then you log off. And I realize that a lot, most of the stress usually is dissipated because it's like I just got my brain off of it. And then your brain can go back to whatever was stressing you out, but not feeling the buzz, not feeling the anxiety, and be a little bit more dispassionate in approaching it and attacking it. Not a panacea, but it is a little bit, it works more often than it doesn't.
Yeah, no. Well, I appreciate the honesty with that. And I think you're right. Like finding something that you really enjoy too and you can get engrossed in, I think is really important because then it just takes your mind fully off the problem, which is really cool. Well, thank you so much, Luke, for being on. This was great. I want to end with one final question, and that is, what has been the key to your success as a leader, as, a growth expert, as Luke in general?
A commitment to personal growth. Professional growth is great. And ambition is great, and wanting to do more and bigger things at your company is great. But it all starts with your foundation, right? It's just like, what people talk about with like how kids are doing at school. It's like, well, what's their foundation like at home? It's if as a person, and my wife has helped me so much with this, is like, if I have the tools for dealing with stress, if I've learned better how to do the give and take of building true relationships versus just trying to network, if I'm more thoughtful about what's most meaningful to me personally in my whole life, that's the foundation upon which professional success is built. I think if you're the more that you can get yourself to be a happy, content person, the more you're going to be able to pour yourself into your professional self with intention and with a solid basis. Yeah, it's a great professional success. It starts at home, kind of is the answer.
Yeah, no, you're right. I love that, right? Having that balance, I think, is super important. Well, thank you so much, Luke, for being on. Really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Oliver. I love the questions you asked, and it's a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Luke Criffield from Amplio. Luke gives a great action tip in this episode. When you show up with solutions, not just problems, you set the tone for progress. It's not about knowing everything. It's about the willingness to test ideas, to move forward when others hesitate. Initiative turns uncertainty into momentum. Next, focus on finding roles and positions where you can grow through ownership and agency. In other words, where you have real responsibility and room to act. Growth accelerates in environments where your actions truly matter. When you have agency, every decision teaches you something. Ownership sharpens judgment, builds confidence, and fuels the kind of learning that sticks. Learn by doing. This starts earlier in your career. Try to resist the urge to find the perfect path and focus on learning. Focus on building the fundamentals that will serve you anywhere. Communication, critical thinking, problem solving. These will compound over time, no matter where you go. And remember, curiosity and listening are the marks of great leaders. The best leaders aren't the loudest. They're the most attentive. They listen deeply, ask better questions, and see what others miss. Because understanding, not authority, is what truly earns respect. Thanks for joining me this week. I encourage you to think about what parts of your life you have real ownership in. Write them down. Take inventory. Maybe you don't have a lot, and it may be time to take on another responsibility. Maybe you have too much. More isn't always better. In any case, it's important to at least acknowledge the balance you have. Remember, professional growth stems from personal growth. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, keep building something great. Thanks for tuning in.